I could turn to the streets and start doing crime if I wanted to, and start doing drugs and whatnot, but it wouldn't have got me nowhere. You might have 100 grand sitting in the property, but if you're making £500-600 a month, you're gonna have to sit on the asset and wait until the market conditions improve. You can't just bang in a load of steroids and look good.
On today's episode, we have Ricky Marley, professional property investor. Ricky's not had the best of upbringings. As we all know, I started at the very beginning. Ricky, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. How do you know that, by the way?
I always do my due diligence on the guests that come on. I'm going to use a quote that you've used in one of your previous podcasts.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of pent-up anger, and that's why I train.
Yeah.
Where does anger come from?
Not so much now. But even in the early days, it's not pent-up anger, I guess. It's just the... When you're starting a business from scratch, off your own back, with very little money... Even if you're investing in property, it can be quite a lonely journey. And so if you don't have that support network around you and you feel like you're doing everything yourself, you don't know whether you're making the right decision or not, you can get a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, which can cause a little bit of anger, all those emotions that it can cause. So for me, hitting the gym on a regular basis allowed me to kind of release all that and detox from the mind. So that the next day I could start again, you know? So yeah, it's not pent up, but definitely more calmer now over the years, you know, as they've gone past.
How did you, when you was younger, how did you deal with it when you was younger? Because I understand that your upbringing wasn't...
No, it wasn't good at all. The way I dealt with it is I left home, basically the age of 16. I said to myself that enough's enough. I was quite fortunate at the time that I was working as like a Saturday job. Left school as well, that turned into a full-time job. And so I moved in with him. I started living with my boss, which was a bit weird. He had three sons and we kind of bonded quite well. I kind of slept on the floor in one of the bedrooms and it just grew from there, you know, left home, didn't regret it.
Why did you leave home?
My dad was quite strict. My mum and dad split up. He was quite abusive to her. He used to beat her up and all that sort of stuff. We ended up in a refuge. She suffered severe depression because of it. We was changing schools all the time because my dad kept on finding us and she didn't want him to find us. It got to a point where she couldn't cope as well. So me and my sister decided to leave my mum and actually move in with my dad. And whether that was a mistake or not, I don't know. In hindsight... It's a bit of a tricky one because in hindsight, I probably wouldn't be where I am now if it wasn't for my dad, but he was a bit too much as well. And the things that he'd done, don't really want to go into it, but he was quite an abusive man, you know, and very strict. But I think it done me good. He made me go into air cadets at a young age, which taught me a lot of discipline, structure, routine. He made me do paper rounds and leave money at the table every week to contribute to their house bills. He made us clean the house. So it was very strict in that way, which I probably wouldn't do to my kids that extreme now.
Yeah.
But I think it done me good, if that makes sense.
I agree. I mean, so my parents split up at a similar age.
Yeah.
I was actually three. And my dad was very strict, very regimental. But then my mum would be the one that would love me and comfort me. And I suppose there's many, many children out there, many kids out there now that have grown up and gone, oh, I wish we could have that environment back. But at the same time, you can't. You need the balance. How did you develop the tools, because obviously you're a father now, to learn to sort of ease up on your kids? Because it's very hard when you've been through that process.
It is very hard. And I think it's just a matter of me knowing what I went through. I don't want to inflict that on my children, but at the same time, I don't want to give them an easy ride as well.
Yeah.
So it's hard to have that balance. You've got to have that. You've got to be quite strict and well-disciplined with your children, but maybe there's a certain way of doing it to make them realize that you can't just have everything given to you on the plate.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to teach my kids now. I've got three boys, one's 16, one is 8 and one is 3.5. And even a couple of days ago, I had a conversation with my 17-year-old. I said to him, look, where are you at school? He doesn't live with me. That's from a previous relationship. But I said to him, where are you at with your studies? He's studying A-levels. I said to him, have you got an idea in mind with what you want to do? And he's not really got a clear direction. And I think this is the problem with a lot of the young children. They don't have a clear direction of what they want to do. They probably don't even know what they want to do. But to have someone there to give them that guidance, I think is important, you know? And that's what I want to do for my kids.
And it came back to, I suppose, the carpentry owner.
Carpet business.
Yeah, the carpet business. Yeah. And it sort of gives you that guidance, I presume.
So I think that's what it was. The fact that I left home and lived with him, he became my, I would say my role model. Not even mentor, but a role model. And that's where I learned the whole business, the whole property and the flooring business was stemmed from that relationship.
And at £25, £25 a day.
How do you know that?
It wasn't necessarily the money, was it, for you? You was learning a trade to then, because you had a vision.
Yeah. At the end of the day, look, I'd had nowhere to live. So I'm living with my boss. I'm sleeping on the floor. I'm working for him as well. He's paying me £25 a day. Like you said, it wasn't the £25 a day. That to me was like food money. And even back then, this was like 20 years ago, £25 a day wasn't a lot of money. It was like £150 a week I was earning. It was barely saving. And when you're young, you want to go out with your friends, drink, buy nice clothes, etc. I couldn't do that really because I didn't have enough money to do it, which is a good thing. But I saw it that I'm not paying no rent. I'm going out with his sons and learning how to fit carpet. And to me, it was like almost going to a college course and learning the trade.
Yeah, I can see that. And then you went and started yourself.
Yeah, I was there until probably about the age of 19. I decided that I know what I know now and it's time to kind of move on. And I did. So I set up a little office in a little flat in Findlay Park. And started advertising my services in the local newspapers, Yellow Pages, The Loot, and decided that now I know how to fit carpet, the only way I can increase my income is to start selling the carpets as well. And that's what I used to do, go around with little carpet samples, go around to people's houses, measure their floors up, give them a price to supply and fit. And it stemmed from there. I started earning good money.
In your smelly fishy van.
Yeah. That's how I started, yeah, with my little fishy, smelly van that I could only afford at the time.
Yeah.
And I was quite good with money because one thing that I was taught when I was young, like I said, it stemmed from there, is that, you know, if you want to get anywhere, you can't just, but I was going to say spunk. Can I say it?
No, you can say what you like. Say what you like.
Spend all your money because at the end of the day, if you do that, you're not going to get anywhere. So I learned how to save at that time.
And I think that's important for what you've just said there. You've never looked at yourself as a victim.
No.
A lot of people would have in your situation. Did you ever feel, like abandoned or unloved as a kid? Or why me?
No, I didn't. It's really weird, that. It's really weird. In terms of love, I didn't even see that as an issue as well, to be honest. I knew my mum was suffering depression. It wasn't her fault that she was suffering the way she was. My dad was quite strict. He did show love, but in a really strange way. But I never saw myself as a victim, like you said.
No.
My sister, on the other hand, did. And she's struggling with it today, to be honest. Whereas I didn't.
How did you and your family cope with your mum suffering from that depression? Because I can certainly relate to you.
Yeah.
With my situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because my mum's side of the family, they're all quite broken. That's bad to say. They're all quite broken. But they were good people, loving people. It's a good family, but they were quite broken in their ways, you know? Whereas my dad, he was actually quite similar. He came from a broken family as well. But he was more business orientated, and I think that's where I learned that from. Back in the day, early days, he had his own minicab office. He used to drive around in a Rolls Royce. And so when you're young and you're around that, you can kind of get inspired by that.
I suppose you've looked at that and then it's inspired you to develop more tools and then go out and...
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, again, I had that as a child, and I kind of battled with that. Who am I trying to please? Did you ever try to please one side more than the other?
No.
You didn't?
When I left my mum, that sounds really bad, but I didn't really contact her. Even now I speak to her, but we're not that close. So no, I didn't have that battle. No, I think I was super focused.
Mm.
Like when I went to move in with my boss, I had that clear vision of that. I want to start my own business. I want to start making my own money. And that clear vision and focus, I was pretty tunnel vision. Anything else that was happening, I wouldn't allow it to get in my way, even with relationships.
So this is something I want to touch on.
Hmm.
When you're super focused, or one, let's touch on it very at the very start.
Yeah.
How did you get that clear vision? Because like you've said, with your own son, there's so much at the minute with social media. I mean, that's another subject. I'll do a whole podcast on that.
Yeah.
How did you have that clarity on where you wanted to get to?
I think at the time, going back when I left home, is that I had no other option. Like I could turn to the streets and start doing crime if I wanted to and start doing drugs and whatnot, but it wouldn't have got me nowhere, you know? Whereas what I was doing, and when you start earning the money, seeing the money, I used to love money. Even now I love money, but you know, at that time, when you start seeing the money coming in and you can start seeing the freedom that it can give you, I think that added fuel to the fire.
And for anyone listening, money isn't a bad thing.
No.
It really isn't. It gives you more time. It gives you more freedom.
100%.
But for people that are listening that have subscribed to the channel, wherever they're listening to, whether it be Instagram, people know that I didn't have an option either. So I was in the same situation as you. But you don't have to have a rags to riches story in order to have clarity on where you're going.
No.
You have to be disciplined.
Yeah, of course.
And you was.
Yeah.
So how did you keep the discipline?
So I think, like I mentioned earlier, the fact that I was in air cadets maybe played a part, because like I said, when I was in air cadets, it was very regimental, taught me discipline, structure, routine. The fact that my dad told me that I had to get a paper and I had to be up early morning, every morning. The fact that he made me get a Saturday job, so I had to turn up on a Saturday, every Saturday, do my work and get paid at the end of the day. That created the discipline.
And what about your relationships? Because certainly for myself, my structure, my routine, we'll use the gym as an example.
Yeah.
I've said it so many times on the podcast, regardless of what relationship I'm in, gym comes first. I come first. I don't have to go and smash a gym for 2 hours a day or twice a day, but I will look after myself first over my children. That seems extreme to others, but if I'm not looked after, I can't look after anyone else.
It's exactly that. It's exactly that. Look, if I don't go to the gym, I would take out my anxiety, my stress, my anger on the closest people around me. So you either accept that I have to go to the gym on a daily basis to work on my mindset and release all that, or put up with my shit. It's one of the two.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. I mean, it's not why I got divorced, but I was trying to run a business, two businesses at the time, and everything was out of balance. So I was trying to run two businesses, I was going to the gym, and then I had the kids at home, and it just went poof.
But it's tough. It's tough because, look, we can go down the route of being employed by a company and earning your fixed wage, whatever it is. Could be $2,000, $2,500, it could be $4,000, it could be $5,000, whatever it is. You've got your job. You do your 9 to 5. You come home. You take care of the family, et cetera, et cetera. You can go down that route and just stay comfortable. I wouldn't even say safe, because you could get sacked at any time.
Next day,
Or you want to make good of yourself and your family and start a business and earn your income and have that possibility that you can increase your wealth, however you're going to do it, and build a nice lifestyle for your family, do the 3-4 holidays a year, drive a nice car, have a nice big house. I think it's hard to have that balance. Do you know what I mean? You can't please everyone. And if you want to go down that route of having a successful business, you've got to put all the hours in it. You've got to.
You've
got to have a woman or a partner, should I say, behind you that's going to support you. And it could work out both ways.
And I don't think you should put too much pressure on yourself. This is my opinion, or too much pressure on that partner to just go, right, this is how it's going to be if you're not on board on your bike.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of what I done at the very start. Said, look, this is how it's going to be. Like it or lump it.
Yeah.
So what I am doing now is, this is where I'm going. If you're on my journey, come with. If you're not, step aside.
Yeah.
I know it sounds really sort of blunt, but that's...
If you can do that right at the beginning,
yeah,
you can save yourself a lot of time and heartache.
And hassle, yeah.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of people now know what I do. Same with you.
Yeah.
And it's, if you're honest, up front, then it will save you a lot of grief. But anyone that's starting out that wants to get in property or any type of business, and because there's so much noise on social media, it does my head, and I get so many messages. How did you do it?
Yeah.
Well, I knew where I was going.
Yeah.
If you don't know where you're going and you've got
yeah
20 different directions which you could go in,
yeah,
you're never going to go in. You're going to just keep going running fucking circles. Yeah.
It's true.
And that's the issue. So I always ask, therapy, did you ever try it?
No. At times I wonder I should have done. Even now, I've still got that hunger and that drive to kind of keep growing and doing well.
Mm.
But I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I have so many ideas in my head that I want to try and implement. Some of them might be great ideas. Sometimes you talk yourself out of it and you don't do it. But I think it's good to have that mindset. Like now, you know, I would never thought that I would do a rent-to-rent property with a joint venture partner. That's two new areas that I never thought I'd done, because I've been so many years, the past 20 years, I've just done everything off my own back and by myself. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think if you want to grow and expand, I think it's good to collaborate now. Mm. I mean, I'm just trying this out. Hopefully it works out well. And if it does, it's going to open more doors, you know?
Did you struggle to trust people because of what happened in your previous life?
Not really. But when I first started my business, I started it with hardly any money. And I took on this very small retail unit. And I put all my energy and effort into trying to grow that business. And it became like my baby. So I found it hard to take on people to help me run that business at the beginning. Mm. And I think that stifled my growth. So trusting people to help you on your journey, I think, is important.
Mm.
Or having the right people around you as well.
I did. Certainly in my business and in like my relationship, my personal relationships.
Yeah.
I found it very hard to trust people because of what, or just if I was let down.
By
family, by friends,
by
pretty much everyone.
Yeah.
So this question was asked to me by a therapist. It's who do you trust?
Yeah.
So that's what I'll ask you, is who do you trust?
That's a tough one, that one. Other than obviously my partner, I trust her.
You've got to say that.
Again, like I don't have a large circle of friends. I keep myself to myself. Obviously I have people that I know that are quite close to me. We have conversations about like-minded topics and subjects. But would I trust anyone enough? I don't think I can, you know, not right now. But having said that, like I said, I'm doing a joint venture with someone with a new rent-to-rent business that we're going to try and build up. Obviously, I've got to have just trust in that person.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is going to be a test for me right now.
And I think it's good to test yourself. But also thinking on that, who do you trust? I think there's different layers or levels of trust. You say you can go into a partnership with someone and you can trust them enough. Mm-hmm. You can just give them enough to go, right, let's do this partnership and see how it works out.
Yeah.
But there's only a monetary value attached to that.
Yeah.
And you can always earn it back because that's the type of people we are.
Yeah.
That's no offense to anyone else, but it comes and goes. That's the way we look at money now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily.
No.
Whereas if it's your partner and it's something that you want to get off your chest or whatever the case may be, there's a different trust element attached.
Yeah, yeah, so, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was very much the same. And I was thinking, fucking hell, that took me by surprise. I thought it's important if people ask themselves that question, who do you actually trust? Ask yourself the question. With that question of your partner, on a previous podcast that I listened to with yourself, you struggled with relationships.
That's because I was just so focused on working. When I say work, I would get up 6-7 in the morning, you probably wouldn't see me again 8 o'clock in the night, 8-9 o'clock in the evening. And it was just relentless every day. So, you know, for someone that's in a relationship with you, you know, they'll probably just see you as a workaholic and you don't give them any time. And so a lot of relationships fell because of that. I say a lot, I've only had a couple long-term relationships. But I was in my growing phase. Maybe I shouldn't have been with anyone at that point, because like I said, I was only focused on working.
Mm.
It's tough, like I said, to have that balance of, I never used to go on holidays either.
Mm.
It's only the partner I'm with now, I've been with her 12 years. she's the one that said, look, Rick, you need to now take a little step back. Start enjoying your time. Start going away. Open your mind and relax a little bit, you know?
What's different with this partner then?
She's definitely more supportive. She don't, if I go to the gym every day for 2 hours, she won't say nothing. She won't question it. She don't give a shit about what I do with property. And it goes in that ear and out the other. She's bored of property. But she knows that I've got that hunger, drive and ambition to grow and build a business and try and increase our wealth and net income, you know?
Did you try and bring her along the journey?
No, I haven't. No.
I think that was my mistake.
Right.
So I tried to drag my ex along and she was like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
Then she came along, was so resistant to the fact, but it then caused issues in the family home.
Yeah.
She done it, but it came, when it all came on top, it was, I was like, actually, no, that's my fault. I took ownership of it.
Yeah.
But she done it for me rather than the long-term vision.
Yeah. I think, look, with my partner, she's quite a strong, independent person and she works for the bank, so she's got her own job. Yeah. And I don't know, we just clicked and bonded. She knew what she wants and I knew what I want and she respected that and I respected her for it as well. And that's how it's been even up until now.
Yeah, I think it's important to allow them to be their own individual.
100%, yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me about the gym.
Oh, gym.
Yeah.
I love the gym.
You've competed as well, haven't you?
I did, yeah. I done a competition in 2012, actually came first. I don't know why I did it. Maybe that it was just to see whether I was capable of doing it or not. I got inspired by a couple of gym buddies. They got on stage and I thought, yeah, I want to do this. I want to give it a try, which is good. Again, it's all to do with discipline and mindset. You know, it wasn't to show off, but the fact that you can diet and get your body down to a certain, you know, look and go on stage and pose and then win as well. It's all part of winning, isn't it, really? So, yeah, I enjoy it. I won't do the competitions again, but the gym, I just love the gym. There's just, I don't know what it is. It's not just to look good. It's just the way I feel after, you know, I just love it.
So when you was doing the competition, I would imagine there was some form of steroid use.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, I took steroids, but not a huge amounts that these big bodybuilders take. Mm. I was taking a little bit, but not a lot, because I was quite good with my training, my form, my food. And I think a lot of people don't realise that you can't just bang in a load of steroids and look good.
No.
You still got to be consistent. You still got to train hard. You still got to have correct form. You still got to eat well.
Mm.
You still got to rest well, you know, so all part of that comes into it.
A lot of my friends they compete even to this day. Chris Jones is one, lives very local to myself. He's in his 50s now, he still competes.
Really?
Yes he takes steroids, but all year round.
Yeah,
he's similar until he gets on stage and then he strips. But he's the same condition all year round.
Yeah.
He will do cycles obviously, but his routine is exactly the same.
Yeah,
I've got nothing against people that do it, but if you're an athlete, that's what you do. I mean, I think it's amazing if you listen, if you can maintain that physique all year round, it's a fantastic achievement.
It becomes a lifestyle though. Like once you get into the routine of training and eating well, and drinking well in terms of like no fizzy drinks and taking out with the sugar and whatnot, and you do it long enough, it becomes like, like if you drink a can of Coke now, I'd feel well guilty. I wouldn't be able to drink it.
Did you find that was hard if you would meet someone new, for example, going out for a meal or anything like that? Because I find it quite challenging.
To be honest, no, I don't. Because I, like most of the time I eat really well, for you to go out and have a drink and a meal, it's not gonna affect you. It's when you do it every day.
Mm.
You know?
So no, I don't mean like having a can of Coke or whatever it might be. So if I meet someone new.
Yeah, like today.
they'll say, why are you eating that?
Right. Why would you need to eat that? Why can't you just eat what you want on the day?
I would eat what I'd normally eat.
Yeah.
But then I feel like I have to explain myself.
Hmm, okay.
Do you see what I mean? So it's, I eat this way because of.
Yeah.
This is why I eat this way.
Yeah.
Because I train. I don't want to. I'm not messing my diet because of you.
Give me an example of what you would eat then.
On a typical day, like I eat 4 to 5 times a day.
Yeah.
So it's powerlifting and CrossFit. That's what I do. So yeah, be your oats, your chicken, your rice, your broccoli, all your normal stuff. So it sounds pretty boring to everyone listening.
Yeah.
So let's say I went to, I'd probably be a steakhouse if I'm honest. So I'll eat the steak, pretty much the biggest one that they do.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, oh, it's so boring. Why not? Can you have pasta with it or anything like that? All the sauces? I'm like, no.
Really? Okay.
Because I'm pretty bland, I'm boring, the same food, every restaurant. Yeah. Like, yeah, but it's so boring, can we not go and get this? I'm like, no.
See, the thing is, right, with me, if I know that I'm going out on a Saturday night, I would not hold back. I'll drink alcohol, cocktails, whatever, have a chips and steak, whatever. But I'll make sure that up until that day, I'm really strict with my food.
You give yourself a bat,
Yeah, you got to plan ahead, like everything, you know?
Yeah, so
you can't be too hard on yourself.
No, yeah, I get that. But I don't know. I think if I do that, I don't know. It's where that's the balance I have. Is I think the training next day will be impacted.
Right.
I don't know what you're.
No, I'm the opposite. If I go out and I know that I've had a blowout day in terms of food, I'm looking forward to getting to that gym and working double as hard.
Yeah, I suppose that's a way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got to eat loads tonight now. So, yeah, no, I'm going to have loads tonight. Yeah, brilliant. I'll be phoning you later on. Pick me up. So, how do you balance contentment with ambition?
That's a tough one. That is a tough one. Right now, in the position that I'm in now, I'm quite content.
Mm.
But I'm still ambitious as well, so I could actually sit back right now and not do nothing. The problem with that is that for so many years I've been accustomed to working hard, keeping myself busy, keeping my mind stimulated, that if I was to just sit back and do nothing now, my brain will start doing overtime and I'll start overthinking. I'll get bored, I'll get agitated, so I need to keep myself busy. So I'm content right now, but I'm also still quite ambitious, which is why I'm trying this new business venture with my partner, you know, business partner.
Why did your brain go into overdrive? It interests me because that's what mine does.
I don't know. Sometimes I think I've probably got an element of, what's that, ADHD or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Where I'm constantly thinking about loads of different stuff. Maybe I'm just an overthinker, but I can analyze something and overanalyze it to a point that it's driving me mad. Do you know what I mean?
Keeps you up at night.
Yeah. So I've done a property recently where I refurbished it and I was actually there on site every day and I was actually doing some of the work myself and I was enjoying it. It was good. It was keeping my mind busy. I could see the progress. And that's what I like. I love all that. You know, for me just to sit back right now, it would drive me mad.
I agree. And that it really does interest me that pretty much everyone that's been in this in your chair, and the one back in Southend has said the same thing.
Yeah,
there's some form of I need to be doing something, but what is that?
Now look, this is the problem with that, right? Is that I know someone as well. He's in his 60s now. He's got loads and loads of properties. He's still buying now. I said, why are you doing that? Because I need something to do. The problem with that is that you've got to work out at which point you're going to have to stop and maybe think of doing something else. A lot of people have a fear of change, you know. I've got to that point where I want to enjoy my life a bit more, do more holidays, spend more time with my kids, but at the same time keep myself busy, but make sure I don't get myself into a position where I'm taking on another full-time job where it's going to start consuming me, you know. And that's why I've decided to do this rent-to-rent with my business partner, because it's something on the side that I can scale up and build. We can do it together. It will keep me busy, but I've still got my time freedom.
I think that's, yeah, a lot of people should take, well, they should obviously reach out to yourself because you've built up a business. Well, this would be your second one now. This rent to rent one will be your third.
Yeah.
But you've not just rushed into it. You've been investing for a long time, over 20 years.
Over 20 years.
But for people looking into your social media, go, oh, he's doing really well. It doesn't take, we've been doing it for a long time.
You know what? It's funny because I had a conversation with someone in the gym and he's recently sold his house.
Yeah.
And he goes, Rick, I've got 150 grand sitting in my bank. I want to go up to Middlesbrough. I want to buy some houses. And then when I said to him, look, you got to think about this. You're going to buy 40, 50 grand houses up north. You're going to be renting them for like $450 a month. Your mortgage is going to be a couple hundred pounds. You've got to think about your maintenance. And I went into the nitty gritty. The interest rates are like 5% now. They could go up. They could go down. Don't rely on capital appreciation because that takes way too long. You need to force capital appreciation at the front end so it makes it more. And I was going into it and thinking, shit. And I kind of put him off a little bit because people think that you can just put your money into property and you're going to become wealthy. Maybe so, you know, over the long term. Mm. But you've got to, nowadays, I believe, that you've got to do it in a smarter way right now.
So I know the way that you invest, again, by doing my DD. For anyone that's listening, how do you force the
capital appreciation
and tell people how you invest in property?
So I've always done that. And again, it stems back to living with my boss and also meeting someone else along the way as well, which I'm still close with now. And so I've always bought properties that required work, always, because even more so now, my knowledge has increased and improved so much over the past 20 years that I wish I knew what I know now 20 years ago, because my property portfolio probably would have been double what it's worth, you know. But I've always bought properties that always need work, and I've always forced capital appreciation in a way where I will, nothing complicated, I buy a house, maybe a 3-bedroom house with potential to turn it into a 4 by reconfiguring the internal floor plans. We hear this all the time. That increases the rental yields. But because you're carrying out a refurb, you're also increasing the value. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, 20 years ago, you know, it was a bit different. Lending criteria was different. You could buy it with a mortgage, with TMW, for example, do a further advance, pull out your money, and then use that to go again.
Yeah.
But nowadays, it's getting tougher. So I would say to anyone now, if they're just starting out in property, don't buy a house at market value if you're going to invest in it. And don't use a mortgage to buy it. And make sure you can always force capital appreciation. Unless you've got shitloads of money behind you and you've got a business that's making loads of money and you want to park the cash somewhere like property because we know it's a safe asset, mm-hmm. then you might not want to put yourself through all that hassle of buying properties that need work, finding builders, using finance like bridging, so that you can refinance pretty much straight away and get your money out. So unless you don't need to do that, then don't do it, you know? But I think if you want to build up a property portfolio quite quickly, then I think that's the smart way of doing it.
And how, like bridging, give me an example of when you've used bridging. Is it the best time to sell now? Is it the best time to hold? I know what my opinion will be, but I'll let you go first.
So a recent example, I've just literally finished a house. It's been rented out for 2 months now. And I bought this about 7 months ago. And at the time when I stacked this deal, it worked out really well when the rates was around 3.5-4%. All of a sudden, we know what happened. Rates started going crazy. I'm halfway through this refurb now and I'm thinking, shit, what do I do? Because when I work out the numbers, it wasn't stacking up. Rates at 6-7% at that time meant that my mortgage payments were going to be higher than the rental income.
That's what we had.
So what do I do? Do I sell this property? Would be the best thing to do, offload it. Mm. But then the market's cooling down now. People are holding back. It's not really a good time to sell. Luckily, towards the end of the refurb, rates started coming down. It stacked a bit better. Although I didn't pull all of my money out, initially I would have probably left about 30 grand tied up in this particular house, based on the rates being around 3.5-4%. So I've left more money tied in now and I'm making less each month, but I've still retained the asset. I still managed to pull out some equity, which means I can go again if I want to. And that's purely because, like I said, I bought the house at a good price and I forced the capital appreciation. Now, imagine if I bought that at market value now, I would have been.
Yeah, leave 100 grand in a deal or whatever it might have been.
Yeah.
I think it's so important for people to realize that what you've just said there, you make your money when you buy.
Yeah.
And yes, you've got to force the appreciation, but also bridging can seem really scary to others, but then they go, oh, I'm going to loan money from the bank of mum and dad. You still got to fucking pay it back.
Yeah.
Or your friends and family. If you're paying interest at, say, 10%, it's the same as a bridging loan. You still got to pay that back plus interest.
Yeah.
But a bridge, just because it seems a lot scarier, is it?
Bridging is not scary. And I think why people are like a bit fearful of bridging loans is because it's a short-term loan. The rates are typically higher. If you've bought at the wrong price or you don't know your exit strategy, then they're going to come for their loan.
Comes down to that. You've got to have a clear vision on, but there's only really two exits. You hold it or
Exactly.
You said it.
Exactly.
But you then got to know what the rates are and how you're going to get shot of it, really.
And the way I'd done it is that I knew how much it was going to cost me to take out this bridging loan. I knew the upfront costs and fees. I knew the interest rate, what the monthly payments were going to be. And you need to stack that into your deal right at the front end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. It's not complicated, you know? As long as you know that, look, in my situation, it could have really gone wrong for me. But worst case scenario, I would have refinanced that property on a buy-to-let mortgage and just pay back the bridging company. Even if I didn't pull any money out, I would have left all my money tied up, you know? And that's what you've got to look at.
Yeah, and what would... So let's say that someone's got 100 grand to invest. They've borrowed it from an investor and they want to invest in, say, like a local area, similar to yourself, but won't give the area away. What do you do then if you leave the money in? Because that's a common occurrence right now.
Yeah. Look, if you're leaving a lot of money tied up into the deal, then there's nothing you can really do. You're going to rent it out. Providing you've got that cash flow coming in and there's a decent margin in the rental income, you might have 100 grand sitting in the property, but if you're making £500-600 a month, you're going to have to sit on the asset and wait until the market conditions improve. You know?
And then sell.
And then sell.
Yeah.
And that's how you got to look at it, you know?
I think this is, again, my opinion. People are looking for that unicorn deal. Yes, you may find it. By the time you found it, you could have probably bought 2, 3, maybe 4 and earned 2-3 grand a month.
Yeah.
Or if you do SA more than that. I'm just biased on that. But
yeah.
You've got to force it and just fucking do it.
But I also think now that property is a long-term thing. Even if you're buying smart and you're adding value and you're refinancing, it's still quite a kind of slow process.
Yeah.
For me personally, I think if you've got 100 grand to put it into one property and leave it tied up to make £500 a month is dead.
Yeah.
I'd rather use that 100 grand to set up a business, build that business, and then use that income to invest it into assets. You know?
Such as the rent-to-rent.
Yeah. Rent-to-rent, or even if you've got enough income coming in from the business, buy the assets, you know? But for someone that's just starting out, who hasn't got a job, who hasn't got a business, and just thinks that they can start putting their money into property and start making shitloads of money out of it, I think they're going to be in for a long ride.
And humbled very, very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So all these people that are going on training courses, actually, I'll get your opinion on that. Mm. All these people that are going on training courses for £1, you're going to be humbled. It's true, isn't it?
I was actually speaking to someone the other day. I'm not going to mention any names. She said, she goes, "So Rick, I want to get into SA. I want to scale up. I want to grow it. I want to get big. I've just paid 12 grand to a trainer to teach me how to scale up.
This is deposit."
Yeah. "They're going to teach me how to scale up." But I said, "Scale up what? You haven't even bought one yet. What are you going to scale up on? Start off small.
Yeah.
Get your first one. See how it works. Learn the process. And then think about scaling up. You haven't got your first one yet. And yet you're paying someone 12 grand to teach you how to scale up. How is that going to help you?"
A lot of... This is it again. Your thoughts on training, I won't because they wind me up, but your thoughts on training providers?
Look, I think...
We don't have to name names.
But no.
No.
I think training is a good thing. There are loads of ways of doing it without spending shitloads of money. Like I said before, if I had the knowledge that I have now, even 10 years, 15 years ago, my property portfolio would be probably double the size. But how did I learn was just... going through the process. So that might have been a slower way of doing it. But I did have people that I met, because through the flooring business, I met a lot of landlords.
So
there was one guy that I particularly met and we got quite close and I basically copied his blueprint. So if you can find people like that, where they know what they're doing and they're actually doing it, then you can learn that way. I think that's the best way of learning, in fact, you know?
It is. I mean, if you... I liken everything to the gym. If you follow my story or follow your story, for example, we'll talk about the gym. I've been 24 stone, dropped down to 14 stone, got back up to a really dark place and then got back up to about 20 stone. It was 20 stone and dropped back down to what I am now. But I don't sell fucking training courses on how to lose weight.
No.
But I've walked the walk.
Yeah.
Same as you.
Yeah.
You've been on stage. You know how to do it. You don't sell training courses on...
No.
So... actually work with people, get surround yourself with people that are doing it. People that are selling training courses, nothing against that, but are they actually doing it?
Yeah.
Do your due diligence.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. Yeah. That's the thing. And I think nowadays we've got social media. Obviously, you've got to be careful who you're following on social media. Are they really credible? Are they speaking the truth? But there's lots of ways of finding out, you know? Mm. Training courses is a tough one for me because I believe that training is good for someone. If they haven't got the people, right people around them, and they don't know what they're doing, then they need to obviously learn.
Mm.
And it's either that or you're going to make a load of mistakes and it's going to cost you money anyway. But I just think spending huge, like 12 grand, 15 grand, sometimes I hear 20 grand courses, it's a lot of money, a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. I think that a lot of these people on social media nowadays, you're paying for a seat at the table. That's what you're paying for. You're not actually paying for it because content's already filmed.
Yeah.
But you're paying for that one seat at a table to go, you should go and do this.
Yeah.
We'll say short leases, for example, Jason, a good friend of ours. Yeah. So if you do shortlist, you'd go to him, but he's not going to charge you 20 grand.
No, exactly.
But he knows his stuff. You know, everyone knows that Jason shortlist is your man.
Yeah.
But if you go to another training provider, they'll charge you 20 grand.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know more than him.
No, exactly. Exactly. So it's finding the right people.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So what are your thoughts on social media then?
Good, you know what? Bad. It's a tough one. I think when I started business 20 years ago, I mentioned that I put adverts in local papers.
Yeah.
I don't even think Rightmove was out by then. And I don't even think I had internet. So the resources were very limited.
Yeah.
The way I built up my business was purely customer base, looking after my customers, providing a good service, giving them a good price, recommendations, et cetera, et cetera. Social media now is a great platform to put yourself out there, to build up credibility. But there is a dark side to it as well. There is a dark side. But for anyone that follows me, I hope that through my journey of investing in property and doing projects, people can get a good insight on how it all works. Sometimes I question myself, why do I create content and put it on social media? For what purpose? I'm not making money out of it. But you can't look at that point. You've got to look at the overall picture. Now, look, I'm going to give you an example. I wouldn't have met Jamie Marley, which is my new business partner, if it wasn't for Clubhouse. And me following him on social media and him following me on social media, because we only met for the first time on Wednesday, believe it or not. I've known him for about a year and a half through speaking to each other, me following his social media, the projects that he's doing. So that's all because of social media. So I think social media is good if it is used in the right way. If you don't consume it in the wrong way and follow the wrong people, I think it's good. I think it can open doors and create opportunities.
Again, it comes back to how you're structured in your daily routine, and how you again use your time comes back to time management, doesn't it? If you run a business, you haven't got time to sit on it and consume the shit that is on there, to be completely honest with you. Yes, I'll put stuff out there, but I'm not going to sit for hours, and I'm not saying that I don't do that, because I do. Everyone's going to be guilty of scrolling.
Oh, yeah.
You will get caught scrolling. I do. If you say you don't, you're talking bollocks.
Yeah.
But yeah, you've got to have a certain amount of time to
sit
on social media.
It's a bit addictive, to be honest, because the first thing I do in the morning when I'm on the toilet is I scroll through Insta.
Everyone's like,
what are you going to do? You pick up your phone, you've got all these apps on your phone, you're even going to go and Rightmove to see what the properties are like, prices, or you're going to go on Instagram or TikTok. What else are you going to do? You're not going to read the newspaper, are you?
No anymore. No,
so
no,
I agree. It can be addictive. But it's funny because yesterday I was ringing up a letting agent in a location not even near me. It was about 45 minutes away from me, trying to secure another rent-to-rent deal, right? So I was speaking to him and I said to him, do you do corporate lets, company lets? He goes, no. I said, why is that then? He goes, because the rental demand around here is so strong right now. Anyway, we started talking. He goes, you know what? I recognize your voice. He goes, do you do TikToks? I said, yeah. He goes, do you drive a blue Porsche? I go, yeah. He goes, I've been watching all your videos and whatnot. I love your videos. I love your content. You just done the yellow house. You bought in the auction and knew everything about me.
Yeah.
And so right there means that he knows who I am because he's been following me on social media. Meant that it could have led to an opportunity of me getting another rent-to-rent, potentially getting another rent-to-rent property off him, if he knows what I'm about.
There you go. So if you put yourself out there and you build your brand, and you do it with the right intention,
yeah,
you can
100%.
You can definitely earn money, but not directly, just no. indirectly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the car situation.
Yeah.
You've just got, well, picking potentially your dream car up.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I followed a lot of people on the social media. I done a little story where I actually sold the Porsche. I done a little emotional video of me selling it and parting with my baby and sold it to McLaren. And then went and picked up a Volkswagen Polo. Because this is now going to be my little runaround car where we're going to, if I need to travel further out, I can use that, you know. But I said to myself, after the last refurbishment that I'd done, was that was going to be my reward, my treat, because I put a lot of work into that project. And so, yeah, I upgraded the Porsche to a McLaren.
And that's been your dream, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what? I'll be honest with you. I've always been a sucker for fast cars. I mean, I had a Ferrari at the age of 26. In hindsight, big mistake. Bought it for cash outright. I thought, what are you doing, Rick? It's a Ferrari 360 Spider, 51 plate. It was old. I paid 50 odd grand for it, cash. And looking back now, I said to myself, why did you do that, Rick? I could have bought a house out of that instead, you know? Yeah. Again, lack of knowledge, a bit naive, young, a bit stupid. But yeah, I mean, but yeah, this is, I love cars. I mean,
petrified.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I am. But you got to treat yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Mate, yeah.
You got to reward yourself for the hard work.
You've worked hard for, well, I'm not saying just that 20 year period, but for that 20 year period, you've now got your dream car.
Yeah. I think anyone that's working hard out there deserves to treat themselves and reward themselves.
It is important for people to listen to what you've just said there. Don't work, and I was so guilty of this. I was working all the hours that God sent, and it leads to burnout. And yeah. Like what you just said there, you finish the refurb. Yes, you've set up another business in the rent-to-rent one, so you can earn more money, have more time, more freedom, but you've treated yourself.
Yeah.
Which is so important.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? It's created a little bit of hunger again for me because I've upgraded
Got to pay for the fuel.
I've got to pay for the fuel, so I'm thinking, shit, I need to earn some more money now to pay for this. So it's created a little bit of hunger again to keep me going, you know. That's my excuse anyway.
What makes you feel accomplished?
Accomplished? Don't know. Define that.
So, accomplished for... What makes you feel like, you know, like if you've done a refurb, you've accomplished the task or whatever it may be, but what makes Ricky feel accomplished, for example, at the end of a gym session? You feel like you've given everything.
Yeah, I mean, I do that with everything that I do. I have to. Even now with this new business, I'm super focused on that now. I was going through a phase where I didn't know what to do with myself. In fact,
Did you feel lost?
I felt lost, and in particular in 2018, I sold the flooring business. And when I sold the flooring business, I said to myself, right, I'm going to sell the business. I'm going to spend loads of time with the kids. I'm going to take them out. I'm going to do this and enjoy my time. And I sold the business, and I woke up the next day and I'm thinking, shit, what am I doing now? Like, there's no structure. There's no routine. I don't need to be in the shop. Don't need to load up the fitters. And I felt a little bit lost. Didn't know what to do with myself, you know? And I tell you, it took me, even though, because the idea was to sell the business and get straight into property full time. I wanted to really expand my property portfolio. And when I sold the shop, I did buy another house. But it was really weird because I still felt a little bit lost. And it took maybe a good year for me to come out of that position. Maybe because I was so used to going into the shop and doing what I was doing. It's just really weird. It was really weird. Now I'm okay. But I still have moments. I've got to be able to wake up and feel like I've got something to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly does to me.
Yeah.
Certainly does to me. Because if I've got, it's weird because I know my week is structured. So on a Thursday, I don't normally train.
Right.
Because it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, gym. Thursday's my rest day. So like Friday, Saturday, I train. Sunday, I've off. So Thursday, Sunday's off. But if something throws me off and I have to then train Thursday, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I know exactly who's going to be in the gym and at what time. It's like,
really?
Oh, because I structure everything around it, like, as I would imagine you do.
Yeah, I do.
But it's, oh, fuck's sake, that's why. Yeah. Why did that happen? And then it just completely throws me off.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, what would you say the lowest point in your life was?
Lowest point.
I'm just rolling off of that last thing that you said, because in 2018 it seemed like a low point.
I don't know if that was a low point. I did feel lost. But it was a sense of relief as well, because if I go back to the shop, sometimes I go back to the shop. The guy that I sold it to was one of my employees, very loyal person, turned up to work every day. And I did say to him, look, one day I'm going to sell you this business, you know? And so sometimes I go back to the shop and I'll sit there or stand there for maybe just to order some carpets for my project, you know? And then I look around, and I see the atmosphere, and you know what? Thank God I sold it. Thank God I got out of it, you know? It felt like I was tied to it, you know? So that was probably my lowest point, 2018, when I sold the business. But after a few months, I broke away from it and it was okay, you know?
What about the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Best bit of advice? God, blimey, I don't know if I... I don't know, I don't get a lot of advice, to be honest. I don't. Like I said, I always keep myself to myself, you know. There's not no one. I mean, there's one particular person that I might ring up and ask for his opinion. But I think ultimately, I would always make the right decision based on what I think, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So you'll take it and then go, oh, I don't necessarily agree with it.
Yeah.
So what, again, you've got the new business, the rent-to-rent business.
Yeah.
So what's driving you to be better at the minute?
So it's very fresh at the moment. I think it's to have something to focus on. You know, keep my mind focused on something is very important. And now that this has been created, I've got something to focus on now.
Yeah, I get it. 100% get it.
I want to build it up. I want to get it to a certain amount of money. I mean, look. For me, it's always been about my net monthly income. I want to try and build it up as much as possible. It's never enough, though. It's never enough. But sometimes I have thoughts in my head where I'm at the moment relying purely on property as my income. Now, if something was to happen, you know, to the property market, it could crash. Interest rates could fly up. I could lose my recurring monthly income from the rents. You don't know what's going to happen. What would happen then? Do you know what I mean? So I think it's important to have another stream of income coming in as backup.
Does that fear come from when you was a child?
It don't. But the fear is right now is that I've worked so hard to build up what I've built up. And sometimes, especially what's happened in the world since 2016. If you think about it, we had Brexit. We had the pandemic. We had the Ukraine war, we've got the energy crisis, we've got rates going up, everything's dictated and controlled by the government. And sometimes I do have thoughts in my head that maybe I should just sell up my portfolio and cash in, because I'm tied to this financial system that we're in, where we're borrowing money from the banks, we're relying on interest rates, we're relying on tenants to pay our rents. And so sometimes I think maybe I should just sell up, cash in, and maybe buy an island somewhere. I'll probably feel lost again, but it's a tough one. I just think that...
But like the TV program, lost.
Yeah. I think just having a couple of streams of income, just to... I think it's important even more so now for people to do that. Like, and the opportunity to do it is possible.
Yeah.
To have two or three streams of income, keep yourself safeguarded against recession and whatnot.
1,000,000%. And I mean, how did you cope during the pandemic? Fucking, I struggled massively.
Did you? What, in terms of being stuck in a house, stuck at home and all that?
Done my head in, to be honest.
You know what? It's really strange, because at first, panic sets in. Like, what am I going to do with myself? Because I'm so used to being active. Then I worried about the business, whether it's going to sustain itself or not because of the rents coming in or not coming in, should I say. But after about a couple of months, that fizzled out. My confidence came back. I actually started enjoying, believe it or not, being in my home, around my family, working out in the garden, appreciating. It's really strange, because it's kind of forced you to slow down a little bit. you know? It forced me to slow down a little bit.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
And it's at some point I was like noticing all these flowers and plants in my garden that I've never seen before, the birds singing and things like that. It's really weird.
Yeah, yeah.
I soon got used to it. It was quite nice.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm guilty of now. And certainly people that I come into contact with, it's like, yeah, we need to slow down, we need to chill. But I think that if you're in the world of social media, or I'm certainly guilty of it myself, you're going around at 100 miles an hour. If you're running a business, although I do promote, take a step back.
Yeah.
Breathe.
Yeah.
You're still going to find yourself guilty of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Even I would imagine you do.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you're running a property business and
yeah.
now a rent-to-rent business and you've got your family you're trying to
yeah.
look after as well.
Yeah,
It's, in my opinion, it's very hard to get the, well, you said it earlier, yeah. to get that balance.
It is
hard, and
yeah.
if you're put that all of your pressure onto yourself, and you haven't got the right support as well,
yeah,
that becomes even harder.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for yourself, luckily you do have the support there
yeah.
to obviously speak to your partner.
And to be honest, I didn't stop buying either. I mean, a lot of people got put off by buying properties,
yeah.
but I carried on. I just carried on. It kept me going. I bought one soon after and just haven't stopped since, you know?
I think that was the most important thing is, I've got the debt recovery business, so bailiffs.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so we couldn't go out.
Right.
So we had to really remain agile. And we went, well, okay, they're not bailiffs. Now they're postmen. So like, now you've got to go out and work in a different way.
Yeah,
so we had to completely.
Do you still have that company then?
Yeah.
So you've got that and the property as well then.
Yeah.
So you've got two revenues of income near that.
Yeah, trying to get the another business as well.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, a few actually that we're looking at acquiring, so we'll talk about it off air.
Yeah,
Lord, cut it out. mate, it's that's really good. And like you said about streams of income,
you've
got to have multiple, because if I didn't have that, it wouldn't have been able to support the property portfolio as well as the rent to rents, because I've got that as well.
But
you've got to have multiple streams of income, because I'd have been snookered.
Yeah.
Because you've got to pay for the employees, with the other business. So always ask this question at the end. Ricky, how are you doing?
How am I doing? I'm doing all right.
Good.
Doing all right. Now, I'm in a good place now. I think, like I said, with this new business venture that I've started, it's given me a new thing to focus on now. So I'm hoping it's going to work out. I'll make sure it works out. But other than that, I mean, I've got a few holidays booked this year. Enjoying spending time with kids and the partner, and that's it, you know.
Perfect,
appreciate
mate.
Where I am right now and stay humbled. That's the main thing, you know.
Ricky, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you very much for coming on, and I look forward to watching your journey.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, mate. Thank you.